And welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and as I promised, we got a great hour for you, especially for a summer Monday afternoon. Delighted to be with you. Our number 888-318-7884 if at any point you want to get in on the conversation. 888-318-7884. Don Eden Goldstein has a brand new, almost a brand new Sunday Will Never Be the Same, A Rock and Roll Journalist Opens Her Ears to God. This is a spiritual memoir, really, and one that starts winds its way through a fascinating world of rock and roll reporting, all the way to the gospel and into the Catholic Church. And you can get it at Catholic Answers Press. And I have to be honest with you, it's not the usual book that we publish. Right? We do a lot of apologetics and that kind of thing. And memoir is a little different for us. And that's why I think everybody here is so delighted by it and supportive of it. And we think you'll just love it. So I hope you'll take a look. Today, we talk with Dawn about the music of the 1960s. And her particular love is the West Coast of the United States, the music that came from that direction in the 1960s. Dawn Eden Goldstein, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me on the show. To be honest with you, Cy, I really love British music as well, but I had asked to talk about West Coast music today because it goes with my upcoming West by Northwest tour.
I thought you might have seen the that new documentary, Laurel Canyon. Who did it? Jacob Dylan, Bob Dylan's son, made one. I thought that might have inspired you, but you were inspired by your own tour coming up out here.
Yes, exactly. That's right. I wanted to say that God made it to the West Coast a long time before I did with my book tour, and you can hear it in the West Coast music.
Now, Dawn, you don't begin your life as a Catholic. Your background is Jewish, and kind of via your mother in particular, a background of searching, of spiritual seeking.
Yes.
Am I saying that correctly?
Yes, that's absolutely right. I was raised Reform Jewish, which is one of the more liberal branches of Judaism. After my parents' divorce when I was six, my mother started searching. So there were also these New Age influences in my household growing up. And then I myself, as I describe in Sunday Will Never Be the Same, I went through my own period of searching and really questioning once I became a teenager. I had some wounds in my childhood that I talk about, including the wound of sexual abuse. And so as a teen, I really doubted that God existed, or if he did exist, I doubted that he really cared about me.
Yeah.
So I went through a time of questioning, and it was from that really agnostic background that I eventually encountered Christ when I was 31, became a Protestant, and eventually at the age of 37, praise God, I entered into full communion with the Catholic Church.
Well, I wonder then what your take is on, and we'll get to the more Catholic-y stuff, but the fact that at some point after Frank Sinatra, after Elvis Presley, the pop music became associated with spiritual searching. I don't know if it was the Beatles or if it was the Mamas and the Papas, but how and why do you think that happened?
You know, I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because I think that a lot of people mischaracterize 60s rock, especially when people think of the 60s, they often think of late 60s, the psychedelic era. I think a lot of people characterize it as simply being under the influence of psychedelic drugs. And so they don't take seriously spiritual aspects. But in fact, even though certainly drugs were an influence, the very reason why many people took to drugs was because they were trying to come to some spirituality that they could own. People weren't satisfied with simply receiving a particular type of religious belief in their household. They wanted to feel like they personally could own to a particular spirituality. And some people eventually came all the way around or all the way back to Christianity, whether it was Protestantism or Catholicism, as you've had it on Catholic Answers Live before from Dion DiMucci, who after many explorations came back to the faith of his childhood.
888-318-7884, our number. Don Eden Goldstein, our guest this hour, and Don spent years, pretty much the 90s, at least, as a rock journalist. Am I right? The 90s?
Yes, yes, that's correct, from the late 80s through the 90s. And I still do a little rock journalism now and again.
Yeah, that's right. And I also noticed on Twitter, you'll comment on if it's an important milestone, I don't know, a birthday of somebody who's a great artist, or a milestone where this song was recorded, 40 or 50 years ago today, that kind of thing.
That's right. And I even still write songs. There's a rock band called the Anderson Council that are on the Jem, J-E-M label. They have a new album coming out called Worlds Collide, and I wrote the lyrics to one of the songs on their album called Camden Town. Another song I wrote for them called Girl on the Northern Line was played on Sirius Radio on a couple of their different channels. So that's another way in which I keep, one toe in the music business.
Don Eden Goldstein, again, our guest, 888-318-7884, our number. So you don't fall into the camp that says everything in pop culture is poison.
No, and I don't think that particular camp can be really called a Catholic camp. The Catholic Church has always really claimed whatever is good and true and beautiful as having its origin in God. And so there are some true, good, and beautiful things in popular culture. We certainly can't take pop culture whole and unfiltered. We have to do like Saint Benedict says in his rule and dash every thought against the rock that is Christ. That image is from like the days when people used to do their laundry by a stream, and they would actually hit their clothes against rocks to get the dirt out of their clothes. We're supposed to do that with every thought and every artifact of pop culture, to hit it against the Christian revelation, so that whatever remains is something that we can take to ourselves.
So in the 1960s then, in this era of spiritual exploration, it did seem that people, I mean, the baby boomers now are kind of getting their comeuppance in a way. Everyone's writing articles about how the baby boomers ruined the world, and books about all the damage the baby boomers did. And maybe some of it is true. They're the first generation to have been raised on television. And there does seem to have been something sometimes self-centered, I guess, in their manner of living, or at least in the way that it was reported that baby boomers were living. But there, one thing that they definitely wanted was something more authentic. Authenticity was very important to these searchers of the 60s.
Yes, that's right. Just like that song of the time, actually song by John Lennon, who had his own kind of back and forth relationship with God. Even at the same time when John Lennon was singing "Imagine There's No Heaven," he was also singing "Just Give Me Some Truth."
Yeah.
He didn't yet know, or wasn't yet willing to accept where the truth came from above, but he knew that there was something that he was longing for, right? that was true. And I think we can say that of a lot of people from that era, even if they didn't know where to look for the truth. There's that in that song from from Tommy, Pete Townsend's rock opera that The Who performed, where they're singing "For What He Knows is the Truth,"
yeah.
And there's this sense that the truth is something that's beyond us, in the sense that it exists, but we didn't make it. It's
right.
Something that we have to find. We don't own it. We discover it, and we. Let it take ownership of us.
It, to some degree, though, that search for authentic religious experience kind of came to be an exercise in looking everywhere but in Christianity,
yes.
Didn't it? I mean,
yes.
Like, I'll go to India, I'll talk to the Maharishi, but I don't try. But please don't try to sell me Christianity.
Yes, you know, unfortunately, that was the attitude of the 60s was rebellion against authority, and in as much as Christianity was thought to be the authoritative religion that had shaped Western culture, that was mocked and rejected. At the same time, some people, even towards the end of the 1960s, we're discovering that perhaps the most rebellious thing to do was to actually rebel against the counterculture,
yeah.
And write and sing about God.
Yeah.
You had the Jesus Freak movement of the late 60s, when the Byrds, I think even before Roger McGuinn really identified strongly as a Christian, the Byrds were making their Sweetheart of the Rodeo album, which had a number of explicitly Christian songs.
Right, right. Yeah. It's so fascinating that many of these at least here in Southern California, I don't think this happened in Northern California as much, but the Southern California hippies, many of them ended up being Jesus freaks and then founding new churches like the Calvary Chapel churches and that kind of thing. So you're right. Those who didn't stop, who kept seeking, often came to find Jesus.
Yes. And you know, they were given the grace of coming to find him in a way that they were able to take responsibility for their own faith. G.K. Chesterton talks often in his writings about a kind of dream that he had as a child, not like a sleeping dream, but a kind of fantasy he had of this story in which a person travels the whole world and then finally comes to this thing that's the strangest thing that this person has seen in all the world. And as he's looking at this bizarre looking thing that seems completely foreign to him, he realizes that it's his own house,
uh-huh.
That after walking around the entire earth, he's finally come to his home and is able to see it as something new.
Right.
And for Chesterton, that was his relationship with Christianity, and that was what led him to realize recognize that his true home was in the Catholic Church.
To come back to where we started and to see it for the first time.
Yes.
A little paraphrase. Of T.S. Eliot.
Yes, T.S. Yeah. Eliot.
Donnie Goldstein is our guest. Sunday Will Never Be the Same is her latest book. She's going to be on tour, and I'm going to give you the dates later in the show about where she'll be here on the West Coast doing a book tour. Our number 888-318-7884, and I'm going to let you talk with Don, but we got to take a break first. Before we go to the break, I'm going to throw something out at you, Don, because this is I'll let you ponder it while we're on the break. But the word love became really, really important to that generation that we're talking about now. But in some ways, it was it had to be reduced from the Christian concept of love to something a little bit baser in order to be useful. I just want to get your thoughts on the use of the word love in American pop music, or British, but in pop music in general, when we come back. Dawn's book, as I said, is Sunday Will Never Be the Same. And you can save $5 right now until midnight tonight. Just go to shop.catholic.com, click on the Sunday Will Never Be the Same banner, and you get the book for $5 off. Shop.catholic.com right now.
Call us now with your question.
Hello?
On Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live is proudly supported by CatholicChemistry.com, a new dating site for Catholics who want to do dating right and believe relationships start with Catholic chemistry. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicChemistry.com for their generous support. On the web at CatholicChemistry.com.
Is prayer powerful? St. Alphonsus Liguori put it this way: he who prays will be saved. He who does not pray, well, you get the point. Prayer can bring us salvation. It's the means of putting us into communion with God, and God can do all things. The more our will lines up with the will of God, the more powerful our prayers, and the simpler they become ultimately, be it done to me, Lord, according to thy word. That's the prayer God will always answer.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Delighted to have you with us on this July Monday afternoon, and our very good friend Dawn Eden Goldstein here with us. She's the author of Sunday Will Never Be the Same, a rock and roll journalist opens her ears to God. Okay, so I left you. Oh, you're holding it up. Okay, I'll hold it up too for the video audience. So have you been trained by a PR professional when they mention the book, hold the book up?
Or, It's simply a conditioned response. Did somebody mention book?
Yeah. My book? Right. $5 off right now at shop.catholic.com. Okay. So help me out with love. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a look at some lyrics from songs from the 1960s. And sometimes I get the feeling with these pop songs, if you think of the word love as having its full Christian meaning, this is a magnificent song. But I don't think they're giving it its full Christian meaning. Am I wrong to think of it that way?
Oh, do you have a particular song in mind?
No, come on. Well, All You Need Is Love. I'll just go with that because
okay.
It's the most obvious.
You know, I recently looked at those lyrics, and the lyrics are certainly very vague and general, and given some of the comments that Lennon had recently made about Christianity, you know, perhaps he didn't have the Gospels on the brain when he and Paul were working on that song. But, you know, it could certainly, one could read Christianity into that, but there are other songs, you know, that certainly throughout the word love with, as you said, baser meaning, some reducing it simply to sexual love, which is an aspect of love, but yeah, is not the whole story.
I can even remember as a child in catechism class, a priest making that point that the word love is a more, you know, I don't remember how he said it to us as children, but it's got much more depth to it than it's being given by
yes,
all these. And he was a little dismissive, you know, but all, you know, these
right,
modern
right,
songwriters, that there's actually something that you need to get about the word love that's much deeper than that. That always kind of stuck with me. Again, 8883. Dawn.
Oh, sorry. No, I was just going to say, you know, it's an important point to say that as Catholics, we don't dismiss boy-girl love. We don't say that
right,
sexual love is on its face unworthy of the name love. I was trained by Thomists when I went to school for theology, and people who follow St. Thomas Aquinas are quite adamant that any earthly pleasure that, you know, doesn't, you know, come from something that's intrinsically evil, any earthly pleasure is in some way a foretaste of heaven. So we can say, you know, inasmuch as boy-girl sexual love gives us pleasure, there's something in it that is connected to the larger understanding of love. It's just not the full story.
Brian in St. Louis is first up. You ready to go to calls, Dawn?
Sure. Hi, Brian.
Okay. Well, hang on. I have to click the little button. Hi, Brian in St. Louis. Your question
Hi.
For Dawn.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering, one of the most remarkable entertainment industry conversion stories I heard was about Bob Dylan's. I was wondering how that affected her at the time, or whether it did or not, and what her impression of that was.
Sure. Well, at that time, I was about 10 or 11 years old, and was still Jewish. And I do remember hearing Dylan sing "Gotta Serve Somebody" on Saturday Night Live, and just thinking it was the most boring song. In as much as I knew any Dylan, I just thought this is not his best. More recently, I've actually written an article on Bob Dylan for Angelus magazine on the box set of his Christian music, where I'm able to appreciate it now on a level that I wasn't then. And quite honestly, he wrote a lot of better songs during that time than "Got to Serve Somebody." There's a song on that box set called "I Ain't Gonna Go to Hell for Anyone," which is just amazing. Even Penn Jillette, who's an atheist, is in the liner notes of the box set. He raves about that song. So no, you know, Dylan didn't influence me, but I think it's important to point out, and Brian, I'm glad that you mentioned Dylan, that long before Dylan became Christian, Dylan, in his songs, was writing with many scriptural themes, even themes from the Gospels. Of course, if you want to learn more about those, you can watch any one of many Bishop Robert Barron videos on Dylan, where he goes into this, because he's a huge Dylan fan. But, you know, this brings us to, why would Dylan, even as someone who grew up Jewish, be familiar with the Gospels? Because that was part of the way that people were formed. My dad remembers at the start of every school day praying Psalm 23 and praying the Lord's Prayer. And for him, as a Jewish child, he didn't object to those. There was nothing inherent in them that he would, you know, disagree with. It was a part of culture that was in the air that people breathed at that time. And I think it helped popular culture become a lot richer, because people understood biblical references, whether or not they were Christian, in a way that we've lost in pop culture today.
Brian, what do you make of that?
That was very interesting. I did buy that box set she's talking about, and it's wonderful. That's really, I think that's some of the best music he's written, frankly.
Yes.
And I just wish you continued success in your writing. I think you're a very heroic and courageous person.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you, Brian. We think that about Don as well. Don, when you mentioned Dylan, even before he's a Christian, there are these themes there.
Yes.
Did he write the bird song "Turn, Turn, Turn," or did he not write that one? I can't remember.
No, Dylan wrote "Mr. Tambourine Man."
Oh, "Mr. Tambourine Man." Okay.
"Turn, Turn, Turn, Turn" was Pete Seeger from the Weavers, who wrote many other classic songs as well. But certainly, you know, that's a great example of a song with scriptural references. It's taken almost entirely from chapter 3 of the book of Ecclesiastes.
Yeah, I would imagine to a kid listening in the 60s, there would be some familiarity with the book of Ecclesiastes that probably
yes.
not for a kid today. They may not even know that this is, I mean, basically the song, it's got a few things that are not, but basically the song is a long quotation from the Bible.
Yes, yes, that's absolutely right. Set to music. And, you know, people appreciated the Bible as a source of wisdom in those days in a way that they don't today. I think, you know, today, if I say Bible in the wider culture, people think, oh, she's a fundamentalist, and they just assume that, you know, just mentioning the Bible means that I'm going to proof text, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
Whereas back then, I think people would have been offended if anyone were to simply limit the Bible to a certain verse, because they appreciated that the Bible in a certain way belonged to Everybody.
Yes.
Yeah,
that I think that's striking is how much the Bible even itself has been politicized, both by those who won't use it, who refuse, and by those of us who do use it, that we've over-politicized it. And it, like, I can, it's just obvious that Pete Seeger, you can't get more leftist than Pete Seeger. And he's, writing a Bible song. It's hard to imagine a true leftist today using the Bible as the root of their music.
That's right. It is hard to imagine. And if and when they do, and I think very occasionally they do so in a way that kind of harkens back to the 60s, because they have a certain nostalgia for when people would do that. But what's really needed is to reclaim the Bible as a source for culture today.
Right, as a source of a foundational wisdom that the whole culture can draw on. Anyways, we're going to take a quick break. You can hear the music. Don Eden Goldstein, our guest. Sunday Will Never Be the Same is the book. We're talking pop music and Jesus and the church, and probably going to talk about the Beach Boys when we come back.
This is Bishop James Conley of the Diocese of Lincoln. Keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Jesus asked his disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" Turns out that today, as back then, this question has a lot of different answers. So many groups want to appropriate Jesus, tweaking his identity until he looks and sounds just like one of them. But then you no longer have the Lord, says apologist Trent Horn. You have an imposter. In his new groundbreaking book, Counterfeit Christ, Trent exposes 18 phony versions of Jesus that we encounter today, helping you to recognize the fakes when you see them, explain why they're phony, and make a case for the full truth and beauty of who Jesus is, the Christ, the Son of the living God. Order your copy of Counterfeit Christ today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Love and beauty. As a little girl, Dawn Eden Goldstein knew she wanted those things, that in them, somehow, she would find God. Over the years, as a rock journalist, she moved among some of popular music's best-known artists, straining to capture that transcendent love and beauty in every note and lyric. In Sunday Will Never Be the Same, Dawn recounts her spiritual journey in beautifully wrought detail, mixing powerful accounts of trauma, healing, and epiphany with funny anecdotes from inside the music scene. It is the rare conversion story that delights as it inspires, amuses as it edifies, and ultimately lays before the reader a lived testimony to the transforming grace of Christ. Order your copy of Sunday Will Never Be the Same by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
This is Deacon Harold Burke Sivers. The Morning Glory team asked the question, changing the rules? Priestly ordination in the Amazon, tomorrow morning, 7 Eastern. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Don Eden Goldstein, our guest. We're talking, we're talking about music, which fits because Don's latest book is Sunday Will Never Be the Same, a rock and roll journalist opens her ears to God. And there's all kinds of, in the book, references to people that you met, some people you didn't get to meet that would have been very nice if you could have met. But your life kind of in this world of rock and roll. And today we talk a little bit about some what happened in the 60s. But I got to tell the folks some things about Dawn before we go any further, because we got that. She's going to want a book tour for this book. And so it starts July 13th in Richland, Washington. July 14th in Sammamish, Washington. July 15th in Columbia Falls, Montana. Then she's in Tacoma, Washington on the 17th. Capitola, California, which is, I didn't even know that was a town, on July 19th, Santa Clara on July 20th. Then she gets down in our neighborhood, Los Angeles, July 21st, San Diego, July 22nd. So if you're near any of those places and you'd like to meet Dawn, and you're going to do some reading from the book, or what are you going to do at those?
Oh, yes. Well, at most of those events, I'll be giving a talk and doing a little reading. I've actually been told by audiences that they prefer when I do less reading and just tell my story. So mostly it'll be that.
Are you just a bad reader? What's the problem there, Dawn? I mean, maybe spice it up a little bit.
What it has to do with is the fact that my book requires a lot of context. And if I just take, a page from it and start reading, people don't know the references. So, maybe what I'll try is giving context and then reading a short bit, and maybe it'll come out better that way.
I imagine this is on the website somewhere here at Catholic Answers, but I don't have an address to go to. So just go to Catholic.com and put in Dawn's name, Dawn Eden Goldstein, and you'll find this.
Also, they can go to my Twitter, which is at Dawn of Mercy, or my own blog, which is Dawn Eden, DAWNEDEN .blogspot.com, and click on appearances.
Yeah. Also, after the whole tour is over, you're going to be at St. Patrick's Cathedral in Manhattan giving a talk for the Edith Stein lecture. I just think that's a wonderful honor, Edith Stein is one of the great people certainly of her era. And as if people don't know, Edith Stein, a Jewish woman, became Catholic, became a Carmelite, murdered by the Nazis in a concentration camp, and just one of the great minds and one of the great hearts. How do you see those two? Maybe a John Paul the Great figure combines a heart and a mind like that. I don't know. But really, one of the extraordinary people, and you get to give the lecture.
I'm really honored to be giving this lecture. I think that perhaps one of the reasons the Edith Stein Guild chose me to deliver their annual lecture at St. Patrick's Cathedral is that I have some similarities in my own life to Edith Stein, in that I grew up in a Jewish family, and I spent time when I was questioning God's existence. Edith Stein even was an atheist for a time. I obtained a doctorate in the humanities. Edith Stein's doctorate was in philosophy, mine's in theology. And I also live a celibate life in the world, which is what Edith Stein did after her conversion for several years, until she was no longer able to teach because of the Nazis' laws against Jews. And that was when she entered the Carmelite convent, which was something that she had long wanted to do. So there are certain similarities. And the topic of my talk at St. Patrick's Cathedral on August 3rd is what Edith Stein taught me about the mystery of spiritual motherhood. So really looking forward to that.
Oh, praise God. I'm so happy. I think that's just wonderful.
Thank you.
I don't know. It's kind of a small room for you, St. Patrick's Cathedral, but I hope it works out. But let's talk a little bit about some 60s songs, because I do want to talk about the Beach Boys, which is also known as Brian Wilson. Some lovely, really lovely, innocent songs from them.
Yes.
That they just almost don't seem to be of their era in a way. They're really beautiful sentiments. I guess they don't seem to be of their era because they don't in any way mock innocence. They don't mock sexual innocence. They seem to almost take the traditional view of chastity and marriage and intimacy as a given, not as a thing to be critiqued,
yes,
but as a given.
Yes.
I'm thinking of God Only Knows, but I'm also thinking of that other one where we could live together, we could be so happy.
Yes, wouldn't it be nice?
Wouldn't it be nice, yeah.
Both those songs are from the Beach Boys' Pet Sounds album, which is considered one of the greatest, if not the greatest, pop album of all time.
Right, yeah. If you're tired of thinking of the Beatles, what's the one that everyone always says is a masterpiece? Sgt. Pepper is the greatest album of all time. Try listening to Pet Sounds sometime.
Which came out before Sgt.
Yeah.
Pepper's and was considered the major inspiration of it.
Yeah. Paul McCartney has said that he felt they had to do something great after Pet Sounds came out. But
yes,
it's just so And I imagine this might be part of why McCartney liked it too, because he often seems to be the more traditional of the two songwriters of the Lennon-McCartney pair. But what do you make of that, a song like God Only Knows? I mean, where he's just openly speaking of God.
Yes, yes. Well, the concept for that song came from Brian Wilson. His lyricist at that time, Tony Asher, wrote most of the words, but Brian really liked the idea of doing a song called God Only Knows. But at the same time, Brian was nervous about having God in the title of a song. He was afraid it might be controversial. You know, this brings me to another related point, which is that I think many people have this idea that it's only in the 70s, 80s, 90s that the name of God became taboo in popular culture.
Right.
But in fact, as early as 1965, which was when the Second Vatican Council was still going on, people were nervous speaking about God. The following year, or no, I think it was either that, was it that December 65 when Charlie Brown Christmas was? I think it was December 65. If not, then it was 66. But Charles M. Schulz with the TV program, A Charlie Brown Christmas.
Yeah, the gospel. He put the gospel on TV.
He had to fight CBS's executives because CBS were like adamant that they could not have Linus read the gospel on this children's program. So that was during a time that, you know, some of us, you know, might look back and say, oh, pop culture was so much more God-friendly during that time.
Yeah.
Actually, it wasn't. Even then, the culture had changed. And so Brian Wilson did take a chance with God Only Knows. And very thankfully, he took that chance because it's one of the most beautiful pop songs that anyone could ask for.
I'm curious of your view of why pop culture and pop music as part of pop culture is so skittish about God and about Jesus when, you know, it has been a predominantly Christian culture from its founding. Okay, so is it because, say you're at CBS, you're like, yeah, but even if it's 70% of people are Christian, we got to go for the lowest common denominator. We cannot be sticking our head up above what is the lowest common denominator.
I think it is a fear of offending people. And one thing that bothers me as someone of Jewish heritage and, you know, in terms of, you know, my identity, even as a Catholic, I'll always be Jewish, as Cardinal Lustiger, the Jewish cardinal, said. One thing that bothers me is when people who are not Jewish, not Muslim, people who have some Christian background, will use the possibility that Jews or Muslims might be offended for keeping Christianity out of the public square. They might say, well, we can't show a Charlie Brown Christmas because some Jewish viewer or Muslim or Hindu viewer might be offended. In fact, even though, yes, occasionally people from other religions are offended, and I would say, you know, they're more likely to be offended if, say, a prayer is being led in a public place that's in the name of Jesus. You know, that's something where a person who's not Christian really can feel excluded. But if it's simply an artifact of popular culture, like not something that people are being made to sing, like in a chorus, but something that's simply on the radio, people of other religions than Christianity aren't necessarily offended because often they feel more comfortable living in a country where there is the freedom to speak about one's religion.
That's fascinating.
They would feel uncomfortable in a country where all displays of religion were banned.
Yeah, you know, while you're speaking, I was thinking of Mike Nichols, the movie director. He's Jewish from Germany, and his family came over when Hitler was in power. And he said when the ship came into New York Harbor and he could see buildings that had the Star of David on them, and it would be like a deli or something like that from the ship. And he said he felt physically afraid for the Jews, like, you are in danger doing that. And his father had to explain to him, no, that's not how it is here. You can have a Jewish deli. It's going to be okay. It is something to be very appreciative of in this country. The kind of,
yes,
I don't know, the mild Protestantism that maybe we all make fun of a little bit, it has its benefits as far as a cultural phenomenon.
It really does. There was an important point raised in the previous hour when Trenton Horn was on the show, in terms of that people don't understand what the First Amendment and separation of church and state are about.
Yeah.
It's not primarily about freedom from religion. It's not primarily about protecting the state from the church being in control. It's primarily about preventing the state from interfering in matters of religion. That was what our founding fathers had in mind.
But that all being the case, by the 1960s and certainly in the let me just go to the 1970s for a minute. You could watch television all week on all three networks. There was just the three networks and PBS, and you could watch all week. You could have never turned your television off, and never once would you have suspected that anyone in America goes to church. It just didn't appear on the television then. And I feel like sometimes nowadays people say, oh, it's been so horrible, this breakup of the, and now we have all these different TV stations. Yeah, but a lot of those TV stations, people go to church in them. Like, people talk about God.
Yes.
Like, at least that is a benefit of, it broke that monopoly, but it was a very frightened monopoly that those networks had.
Absolutely. I mean, just the fact that you could have the Jim Gaffigan show on a major cable network, and that they could talk about their life going to church. That was something one would never have seen on 70s TV.
Right. I think that the people over at Pop TV will be delighted to hear you call that a major network. They're going to be so happy that you did that. We have to take a quick break. We'll continue with our conversation with Don Eden Goldstein. Don's the author of the brand new book, also on sale right now at shop.catholic.com. Sunday Will Never Be the Same. A rock and roll journalist opens her ears to God. If you go over to shop.catholic.com, you get $5 off the book until midnight tonight.
Bringing you the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
I'm really a revert. There are a lot of converts on Catholic radio, a lot of reverts, those who have come back to the faith. And ever since I came back to a practice of my faith, I started praying the rosary, going to even daily mass, God has led me on an amazing journey and used me in a lot of incredible ways that I never dreamed would have been possible.
Take Two with Jerry and Debbie, tonight, midnight Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
All right, I apologize. He wasn't on the Pop TV network. It was TV Land. The Jim Gaffigan show. It was on TV Land. They'll be similarly delighted to hear themselves referred to as a major cable network. I don't know why.
You're not going to let me live that one down, are you?
No, I'm a very cynical and evil person. That's all. Other than that.
But we love you.
I appreciate it. I need it. Again, 888-318-7884 is the number. Now we're going to go through some 60s songs. We'll get hardcore about this thing and actually look at some songs from the 60s and their Christian meanings. But I also want to, continue this conversation, and you're welcome to get involved if you want to call 888-318-7884. Talk about, is there a realistic way? Is there any bridge from pop culture to the person of Christ? Because even if we see Christian themes or Bible themes, the key thing is that people come to know the person of Christ, and I wonder how we maybe, develop from some of these pop culture phenomena that at least make reference to Christ or the Bible, some ways of connecting people to the actual person that all of this is about. Does that seem fair enough?
Yes. I think one way to answer that is to say that anywhere that you see something that's honest about the human condition,
right,
Christ is there. Christ, who is like us in all things but sin. So certainly, you know, in that sense, we can find him in the pop culture. There's a saying of the ancient Roman playwright Terence, which was a favorite saying of Pope Paul VI, which is, "I am a man. Nothing that is human is alien to me." And Paul VI also writes in his first encyclical of his pontificate, Ecclesiam Suam, we as Catholics need to be in dialogue with each other and with the world, and that the first circle of our dialogue is the largest circle of our dialogue. It encompasses the whole human race, because anything that any human being experiences, we've experienced as Catholics in some way. So, you know, I think likewise, art that's honest, you know, can be found to have something in it that speaks to Christianity or where Christ can show through, you know, provided that it's not, you know, something that's exploitative.
888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. So in who else's, we mentioned the Beach Boys music, and who else's music, especially from that era, and we're focusing on the West Coast because you're doing your West Coast book tour coming up here. Who else was able to incorporate these themes, genuinely religious and sometimes Bible-based or Christ-related themes?
Well, one is Salvatore Bono, Sonny Bono, who certainly grew up Italian Catholic, although he did some wandering later in life. But he was formed in a Catholic mind, and he wrote a beautiful song that's become something of a cult favorite now, called "Laugh at Me." He released it as a solo single. It was a minor hit, I think, in 1965, late 65 or early 66, and the song tells the true story about how Sonny and Cher went into this restaurant where they knew the owners, and it was like it had been a hangout of theirs for a while. But one night, when they went decked out in their rock and roll finest, and back then they were wearing things like crazy fur vests and stuff, and Sonny by then had a long, almost page boy kind of hairdo. But this was 1965, and this was a rather tony Los Angeles restaurant. And so the owner apologetically asked Sonny and Cher to leave because their dress was scandalizing the people present. So Sonny wrote this beautiful song in which he sings, "Laugh at me and I'll cry for you." He's not singing it vindictively.
Yes.
He's saying that he will pray for the people who laugh at him. That's straight from the gospel. That's
right.
That's from the Sermon on the Mount, about turning the other cheek and praying for the people who spitefully use you. And Sonny expresses that very thoughtfully, poetically in "Laugh at Me." I invite listeners to look up that song.
Oh, how cool. We got a couple calls for you, and I'm concerned about the time. Shall we go to the calls and then we'll...
Sure.
All right, let's start with, is this really who I think it is? Tom Nash, our friend, Tom?
Hello there.
Hello, Tom Nash.
Hi, Tom.
How are you, Si? Good to talk to you, Don. Hey, you guys were talking about Wouldn't It Be Nice with Beach Boys, which I enjoyed as a young man growing up, born in 62 in Detroit. But it was interesting that later on, they talk about Staying the Whole Night Through, that for its time, that kind of raised eyebrows because it's like, uh-oh, what does it mean, Staying the Whole Night Through? That even that, at that time, implied that, well, Staying the Whole Night Through, they're not married yet. It just showed you where the culture was at, in a good sense, that would have raised concern. Of course, not to presume that the Beach Boys meant it in a bad way, but I think the culture is in a better place that it would.
Well, actually, they're singing about marriage. They're singing about longing for marriage and fantasizing about the day when they can, after having spent the day together, hold each other close the whole night through. So it's actually a thoroughly Christian sentiment.
I know. I could see that too. And I remember that DJs, because it came out, it wasn't exactly clear that that was raised an issue.
But it was a nervous time.
Versus like with Let's Spend the Night Together with the Stones. They had
That's the one that caused concern.
That was very clear.
Yes.
Yes. Well,
and that was problematic, and that had to be changed.
Yes, yes, exactly, Tom. That particular song is the one that's caused concern. When the Rolling Stones were performing Let's Spend the Night Together on the Ed Sullivan Show, they were told backstage that they would have to change the lyric to Let's Spend Some Time Together. That video is available, and if I remember correctly, even though the song was announced as Let's Spend Some Time Together by Ed Sullivan, I think Mick Jagger claims that he still sang Night, because Jagger, of course, was a rebel.
That's right. Yeah, but you can see how the Rolling Stones song is very different in character from what, I mean, just that the melody, polyphony when they sing We Could Be Married. I mean,
on
the Beach Boys record, they are celebrating the idea that we could be married. That's what they're it's about. What do you think? What do you make of that, theologian Tom Nash?
I would say yes, and it's an affirmation of marriage, and similar to my native Motown, where many of the songs, and Gary Gordy was mindful of it, particularly in the early years, of not wanting to offend a largely white audience, to make sure about what they sang and et cetera, how they presented themselves, given that they were in a more challenging situation as African-American performers, performing oftentimes to white audiences. And I just think that really made the music all the better because they were being mindful. And there's some lyricists with Holland, Dozier Holland.
Don?
Well, that's certainly true. I'd be a little cautious. I don't think, Tom, that you necessarily, you know, meant that black audiences would be more accepting of non-Christian themes, because we know from you know, just social experience, sociology, that African Americans are one of the more religious, more Christian believing groups in America. So certainly, you know, it wasn't that
it wasn't a put on.
Yes,
that was real.
Put on,
right?
But it is certainly true that in the early days of Motown, that Berry Gordy was conscious that record stores wouldn't want to necessarily display albums that had pictures of African Americans on the cover. I think the first album by the Marvelettes and other early Motown albums had these sort of silhouetted caricatures of the artists on the cover, rather than showing their actual photographs.
Tom Nash.
It's terrible that was the case, that there was such prejudice, but that was how it was.
EWTN and Ave Maria Radio, theologian Tom Nash. Also, there's a room in my house named after Tom, the Tom Nash Room. I don't know. That's actually true. My wife says, put it in Tom Nash's room, because that's where he stayed when he stayed with us. Thanks for the call. As a matter of fact, just this week, the New York Times had an article about how annoying it is that African-American people are economically liberal, but they won't give up being socially conservative and Christian. They just don't live up to the values of the New York Times. Don Eden Goldstein, there are so many more we could have gotten to. I feel like I maybe monopolized more of the time than I should have, but it's such a delight to have you here with us.
It's- really a delight being on your show, too. Thank you so much, and God bless you.
And I want people to come out to the book tour. So give the website again where they can find the dates for the book tour.
DawnEden.blogspot.com. That's DawnEden.blogspot.com.
You find it there. And then also, if you're going to the Edith Stein lecture, or if you're in the neighborhood in early August, hit that. Thanks, Dawn.
Thank you. God bless you.
You too. And tomorrow, 2 hours of open forum. And we'll see you then, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.